listeners, you've joined me at a very exciting and indeed crucial moment in this match. We're now in the closing minutes of play, with England needing 7 runs to win with only 1 wicket standing. And now McKenzie, bowling to Murray, comes in, bowls. Murray groped at that one. Murray groped at that one outside the off stump. And obviously, he's got to go for the runs now in these conditions. That 7 is going to seem more like 70. And now McKenzie in again, bowls to Murray. And a magnificent shot. 4 runs all the way. Well, that's 4 of the 7. And by my watch, this will probably be the last ball of the match. And now McKenzie runs in. And it's a faster one. Murray hooks magnificently. They're going for a single. They'll get a second. They're going through for the third. A magnificent throw from Laurie. Murray racing for the crease. Can he make it? Yes. Yes, England have done it.
That was an excerpt from The Magnificent 7. Another in our series, a film worth remembering, which is more than can be said for the next half hour.
However, for those with nothing much on, may we suggest Clothes. Then I'm afraid we'll give you some idea of what to expect from a sort of radio show which is beyond our ken. Among those taking part are Hal and Lucy Nations, Jimmy Wheeler and the Temperance Seven, the Dagenham Motors Exhaust Pipers, Miss Lillian Licorice.
She goes out with all sorts.
So continue. Herbert Dabb, the Pearly Queen of Chalfonts and Giles, and, of course, Mr. Kenneth Horn, who prefers to remain anonymous. Ladies and gentlemen, Kenneth Horn.
Good evening. Welcome to Beyond Our Ken. Now, last week was the first show in the new series, and according to the various statistics supplied by the BBC, there's no doubt that this is the second program in the series. We had quite a bit of reaction after the first show. When I left the studio, there was a small group of people sitting down on the pavement with banners which said, Ban Kenneth Williams. However, I soon told the rest of the cast to get up. And everything was really quite orderly. In fact, when Williams himself appeared on the scene, well, I suppose that was the only thing that could have been described as an ugly incident. Well, as usual, I had quite an eventful week. On Monday, I was invited by the Art Lovers Society to see an exhibition of stolen paintings. On Wednesday, well, I was doing a spot of autumn cleaning at home, and I came across some of my very first school things. You know, satchel, pencil box, Conkers, razor. What memories they brought back. And there were 3 dusty old books, Ovid, Virgil, and Homer. Of course, at the time, they were all Greek to me, but I sat down and reread them, and really, I found those ancient myths and legends quite fascinating. And so tonight, in an attempt to bring a spot of third program culture into the proceedings, we're going to have a bit of a bash at one. Paul, some Siege of Troy music, please.
Thousands of years ago lived the legendary deities, Greek gods and goddesses, who dwelt on Mount Olympus.
They lived well. To each goddess, each god gave ambrosia, and then nectar.
Among the many deities were such as Mars, god of war.
Venus, goddess of disarmament.
Bacchus, god of horse racing. Vesta, goddess of underwear.
Thor, god of birth pipes.
And Pan, god of theater critics. There were, too, the famous muses who represented the arts and presided over social occasions. For instance, Terpsichore, who did the corrigorigraphy. And Thalia, who looked after comedy. She was responsible for such ancient gems as...
I say, Persephone, who was that mortal I saw you with last night?
That was no mortal. That was a deity, old man.
There was another one called Polyhymnia. Don't know much about her, except she kept cropping up in difficult crossword puzzles. However, their nightly entertainment was a great success, and cabaret time on Mount Olympus was usually heralded with the announcement,
here is the 9 o'clock muse.
And by Jupiter, it's Jill Day.
Why so cool, you? Hey there, shy one, come be my one. Please don't brush off. What's the brush off? I can't compel you to buy what I sell you, but I'm gonna tell you right now. You wanna have bells that'll ring. You wanna have songs that'll sing. You want your sky of baby blue, you gotta have me go with you. Why the hold out? Have you sold out? Time you woke up, time you spoke up. This line I'm handing you is not a handout. Rhyme. You gotta have me go with you all the time. You want a love that's truly true? Well, you gotta have me to go with you. If you want two hearts to be in rhyme, well, you gotta have me there all the time. You want that apple on the bough? Well, you gotta have me there anyhow. You want a love that's fine and free? Well, you gotta have you to go with me. This line I'm handing you is not a handout. As a team, we'll be a standout. You wanna live high on a dime? You wanna have two hearts in rhyme? You gotta have me.
Thank you, Jill. Well, now our legend begins with a young goatherd by the name of Paris. He was so handsome that all the nymphs adored him, and each one's heart was filled with song.
I love Paris in the springtime. I love Paris in the fall.
And one day he was sitting down on the hillside of Olympus when suddenly...
Oh, dummy, what was that?
It is only I.
Well, is that something to eat if I was you? Who are you, anyway?
I am Hermes, sometimes called Mercury.
Well, why have you got them dirty great wings on your hat and shoes?
Because I am the winged messenger of Zeus.
Well, I think you're really a myth.
Yeah, do you mind?
What do you want?
Take this. It is a golden apple.
How do you expect me to get my teeth into that?
Oh, you mortal nit. It's not an eating apple.
I wouldn't fancy cooking it either.
Only you belt up a minute, I'll explain. In a moment, you will behold three of our loveliest goddesses. See, here they come now. And here is Athena, Hera, and Aphrodite. They are wearing only the flimsiest of negligees.
How
Oh. Stop that. Okay, any more trouble for you, I'll throw you in the mountain stream. I've always wanted to see Paris in the spring.
Now listen, look upon these three enchanting beauties, and I'll tell you what to do.
I wasn't born yesterday, you know.
You must award the golden apple to the fairest one of all.
Oh, I see. It's some sort of contest.
That's right, and you've got 60 seconds from now.
I am Athena, goddess of knowledge. I will give you wisdom.
I am Hera, queen of queens. Choose me and I will give you power.
I am Aphrodite, goddess of love.
You win!
Oh, handsome goatherd, in return for choosing me, I will take you to Helen, the most beautiful woman in the whole universe. Her face and form are lovelier than the loveliest dream. Her voice, soft and caressing. And, oh, for goodness sake, stop dribbling.
Oh, where is this mad bird?
Helen is in Greece.
Oh, you women and your beauty preparations. Come on, let's get cracking.
Hello?
Aphrodite sent me.
All right. Come in.
Helen?
Not me, mate. No. You'll find her in there.
Oh, thank you.
Is that you, my husband?
No.
Then come in. Jove, it's some sort of new centaur. Half man and half...
No, it ain't. I'm standing in front of one of me goats. I am the goat herd, Paris. A handsome youth. With whom Richard will fall in love with immediately.
That's the trouble these days. Everything's instant.
Helen, I am going to try.
Well, shut the door, then.
My loving arms will hold you close. My fevered lips will taste the sweet nectar of your kisses. My...
No, Paris, we mustn't.
Oh, go on.
As long as it's Greek mythology, you can get away with anything. So Helen was whipped off to the city of Troy, and when her husband, Menelaus, discovered that he was minus his missus, he sought counsel with his brother, the great King Agamemnon.
Hello, Aggie. Something terrible's happened.
What is it, Menelaus?
It's Helen. Somebody's pinched her.
Well, I'm not surprised. I've always rather fancied her myself.
This is no time for jokes. Can't you see how distraught I am? See, I have wept and torn out my hair.
I know exactly how you feel. Very well. We shall raise an army and lay siege to Troy, taking with us the most brave and cunning warrior of them all.
Achilles?
No, not that heel. I speak of the mighty Odysseus.
That many call me.
This is the mighty warrior?
That's right. I'm Phyllis.
Fearless.
Oh. Oh. Oh, yes.
Then let us to the Trojan War.
Yes.
Thus did the Greek army encamp outside the walls of the city. But Troy was an impenetrable fort, and after 10 years of siege, there was still no surrender.
It's no good, Agamemnon. We just can't get in.
I know, it's just like the first year of My Fair Lady.
How can we possibly get over that 30-foot wall?
Why not take a running jump?
Same to you. We've had enough of your bright ideas. Entice them out, he says. Pretend we're nymphs, he says. The whole Greek army prancing around in nothing but thin chiffon nighties.
rheumatism.
It's not much fun, is it?
What an idiotic scheme, and all without avail.
That's it. That's where we went wrong. If we'd done it with a veil, they wouldn't have noticed our beards.
Luck is on their side.
We must do something. Oh, my heavenly Helen.
Wait a minute. I've got a marvellous idea. Here, why don't we just walk up to the fort and give them a present?
Why should we do that?
Well, it's not much the present as the fort behind it.
And what precisely are we going to give them?
A dirty great wooden horse.
Well, Odysseus, your plan has worked. The Trojans have accepted the gift. And the 40-foot wooden horse is now within the city walls.
It's pity, because I just thought of a much better idea.
Oh, what's that?
We should have had soldiers inside.
So, in the following year of siege, another wooden horse was built, this time filled with Greek warriors and wheeled into Troy.
Now, look, Paris, it's another of those Gigi's.
Yeah, but I don't trust them.
What are you doing with that?
Yeah, there's somebody inside that horse.
Strange. It's a bit early for pantomime.
Billy, look. His tummy's opening.
All right, men. This is it. Up and at him.
Defeated, and the Trojan War brought to an end.
It was a long and bitter struggle, and all for the love of a beautiful woman.
Why? What for? Where's the sense in it? What is it that drives men on in their eternal pursuit of the female?
Well, it's hard to say, isn't it? But I know one thing.
What's that?
The Greeks had a word for it. Here are four people for whom we always have a good word, the Fraser Hayes Four.
Round her neck, she wore a golden locket. She wore it in springtime and in the month of May. And if you ask her why the heck she wore it for her lover who was far, far away. Far away, far away. She wore it for her lover. Far, far away. Round her neck she wore a golden locket. She wore it for her lover who was far, far away.
Round the clock she pushed the calculator.
She pushed it in
something about your work?
Certainly, yes, yes. Well, of course, I specialize in various hairstyles for the fashion concerts, such creations as the Audaci line, the very latest in the old-fashioned single, but the swept across the style, and the CC, to say nothing of an expert as senior.
Going to be interesting at first, but well, you see, I just never have anything to do.
Well, what is your job?
I'm secretary of the Kenneth Williams fan club.
We turn now to the career of a famous novelist, author of the sensational and controversial new novel Return to Paddington Place. Ruby M. Chatterton. Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening to you, son. Thank you for asking.
Well, now, I expect yes. It comes as a great surprise to the public to realize you use a pseudonym.
No, I don't. I use a typewriter.
Oh, well, never mind. Still those who prefer not to work. And even now, up and down the highways and byways, one still comes across the disheveled and shuffling figure of the tramp.
Hello, Rodney.
Hello, Charles.
A gypsy am I, a wandering boy. I travel the road.
Who cares?
Oh, this is the life, isn't it? Where did you sleep last night?
In a hedge.
Nobody disturbed.
Yeah. our team of experts, and so to this week's question on the subject of careers. And it comes from...
Mrs. Hattie Fairweather. I should like to ask the panel, if they were then, who would they like to be?
Thank you, madam. Well, now. Well, now, if you weren't you, who would you like to be?
Well, I think the answer lies in the soil. We should be contented with who we are. More people would be satisfied with their lot if they got right into the country. Right deep down in the real countryside, into the country. On my farm, I'm right in it. Cottage window, I've a really breathtaking view. And the lovely rustic piece who lives opposite.
Miss Van Meadows, now, what would you like to be?
I don't know, really. I can't think. No, I don't know.
Well, now, perhaps you'd like to be an actress.
Oh, no. No, I don't think so. No, I'd rather be a film star.
I see. All right, now, Ditheridge.
Well, of course, I think it's an absolute waste of time to ask such an asinine question, and if I may say so, a waste of my academic qualifications. I mean, say futile questions such as this reduce an erstwhile erudite discussion to the level of a cheap parlor game.
All right, Ditheridge. Yes, now, just for the record, who would you like to be? In Edinburgh. There's a motorist who uses a starting handle, a bit of a crank. Good night.
You might have been listening to what I've just missed. Beyond Our Ken, a sort of recorded radio show. Conducted by Paul Fenelon. Eric Merriman wrote the script.